Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It used to be that when someone said the government was spying on them, tapping their phones and reading their emails, you could easily say that person was suffering from a paranoid delusion. Today, it looks like with the NSA revelations spying on us, we could probably say, well, was that actually a delusion? The line between mental illness and being mentally fit is not as broad as you might think. And in his new book, Suspicious Minds, How Culture Affects Madness, Dr. Joel Gold makes the case for how our environments are affecting our thoughts and sometimes causing our delusions. Dr. Gold, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So the centerpiece of your book is the thing called the Truman Show Delusion. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. About 10 years or so ago, I started seeing a series of men at Bellevue Hospital here in New York City, and they all said essentially the same thing, that their lives were reality television shows, that everyone in their lives, their family members, even me, the doctor, we were all actors or at the very least reading from a script. There were cameras everywhere, and their lives were being broadcast around the world for the entertainment of others and without their consent, much like in the Jim Carrey movie, The Truman Show, hence the name The Truman Show Delusion.
And so, well, they were wrong, right?
As far as I'm aware, yes, they were wrong. They had this, you know, persecutory and grandiose delusions, as we would call them, that, you know, they were in some sense the most famous person or people in the world, and at the same time that they were being persecuted because these corporations, you know, did not ask their permission, and they felt quite understandably traumatized for the most part that they couldn't do anything in private. Wherever they went, they couldn't trust anyone, and everyone was, you know, pulling the wool over their eyes, so to speak. And some people went to the limit of, you know, one gentleman threatened to commit suicide. One guy went to the United Nations and asked or tried to ask for asylum from the show, but he got into a scuffle and was brought to the hospital. So, you know, even though it sounds on some level to be, you know, perhaps a superficial kind of thing, these are not, you know, your perhaps exhibitionistic or narcissistic people who choose to be on reality television shows because they want to become famous. On the contrary, these are, you know, people who want to be left alone, but they have this psychotic delusion that they're very much not alone.
And you were the first person to notice that this was a new delusion that seemed to be widespread, or not widespread, but there were more than it wasn't just a one-off.
Yeah, I mean that's a good observation. The first person I saw, I really didn't think much of it because at Bellevue, you know, we see so many unusual delusions that, you know, it was interesting in its way, but I didn't think much of it until the second and third and fourth, ultimately the fifth gentleman that I saw and treated had essentially the same beliefs. And yes, I suppose I was the first person to name it as such. I'm sure there were other doctors in other cities and other countries who were hearing the very same kinds of ideas, but perhaps because of Bellevue being what it is and the volume of people we see and the number of psychotic people we see, I happen to find, you know, these cluster of men over the course of a couple of years, and it just sort of, you know, something went off in my mind that this was significant.
And as you began to write about it, or you were being written about for talking about this, and other people from around the country, around the world, were able to say, yeah, this is happening here too.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose if it were only the five men, it wouldn't have gone much further than that, you know, just giving a talk at the hospital. But once there was a bit of coverage, we started, and when I say we, I mean my brother, who is a philosopher, and myself. We've written this book together, and we've done quite a lot of thinking together. He's a philosopher of psychiatry. I didn't know that existed either, but apparently it does. And so once word got out, we started getting emails from around the world, as you suggest, from psychiatrists and psychologists, mental health workers of all kinds, as well as loved ones, primarily. For the most part, people who experience this delusion, understandably don't reach out because, of course, it's all part of the show. We received some emails that said to that effect, you're just trying to draw me out. This is trying to get a reaction from me for the show. You know, this is just a news story planted. A handful, maybe more than a handful over the course of years, people have reached out to us having experienced this delusion in the past and now having recovered from it want to share their story. And that's actually very moving, people who want to tell other people that they've experienced just that, that they want to know that others can be helped and that they can help others.
So let's talk about that recovery. So they had this paranoid delusion that they were part of this elaborate reality TV show, and they were in it, they were the center of it. But they were never told that, so they were feeling that they were always being watched. But then, so they come in to get treatment. Is this like a pharmaceutical treatment, or is it talk therapy? How do you cure someone of that?
That's a really good question as well. You know, for the most part, in an acute psychiatric setting, we do tend to rely primarily on psychiatric medications, antipsychotic medications. Of course, we do have other kinds of therapy. We do talk to our patients. We have group therapy. We have art therapy, dance therapy, and the like. But if you're talking about the delusion itself and sort of talking someone out of their delusion, it's very, very challenging. Understandably, that's sort of what makes a delusion a delusion, that there's evidence that, you know, this is not the case, and yet people cling to their beliefs very, very tenaciously. Though in recent years, some research has come out, primarily out of the United Kingdom, that suggests that people can have talk therapy when they're psychotic. And for decades, if not more, 100 years, the idea that you would do talk therapy with anyone with psychosis, and when I say psychosis, I mean hearing voices or seeing things, hallucinations, or having these, again, unusual beliefs that are held very strongly and often very strange beliefs that we call delusions. So for the most part, delusions are sort of left to themselves. What could you possibly say to someone who's telling you, you know, doctor, you're not a doctor, you're an actor, so leave me alone. And often people will refuse medication, understandably. They don't feel there's any.
Because it's part of the conspiracy. You want to drug them.
Exactly. And in fact, one guy, it was kind of amazing the way he sort of came up with this solution. We offered him a medication for his psychosis, and he took it, but he said, I'll only take it because I know that really you're giving me medication that I take for my medical condition, and so I'll take it, but, you know, I know that because it would be irresponsible of the reality show to withhold my medication from me because I have this medical condition. So you're telling me it's psychiatric medication for the show, but really it's for, you know, whatever his medical illness was. I thought
right.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, it is amazing how inventive people can be with their delusions. And we're going to talk about how pop culture entered into this the adaptation of the Truman Show into this delusion and what that means, how culture influences insanity, madness. We're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Joel Gold. His book is Suspicious Minds, How Culture Shapes Madness. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. About a decade ago, Dr. Joel Gold started seeing a small but steady stream of patients who were each complaining of a similar problem. They believed they were the subject of a reality TV show and everything happening around them was all being faked. They thought they were in something like the Truman Show. He called it the Truman Show delusion. This wasn't just about him, Dr. Gold, discovering a new delusion, but also drawing a conclusion about how madness was being influenced and by pop culture and our culture all around us. And we're going to talk about that right now. But if you got a question or a comment for Dr. Gold, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. So, Dr. Gold, why is it important to acknowledge that culture and outside influences have some sort of control over these delusions?
Well, first, I just want to make a point or clarify something. We're not suggesting that the Truman Show delusion is a new kind of illness or a new diagnosis. It's essentially a new form, or I should say the content of the delusion is changed. So over time, and this speaks to your question of culture, over the course of time, there are certain forms of delusions. So I mentioned persecutory or grandiose or, let's say, religious, and there are a handful, let's say a dozen kinds of delusions. And as the decades have passed, depending on the environment, people will incorporate just that into their delusion. So, you know, as an example, we often say during the Cold War, people would suggest that the KGB was following them or the CIA was monitoring them. And as the Cold War has, you know, ended, for the most part has ended, we now have this new kind of belief. But we do think that the Truman Show delusion does speak to a different kind of idea, more than simply, oh, well, the country is less religious now than it once was, so we see fewer religious delusions, fewer people suggesting that they're Jesus or something of that nature, although that is, in fact, the case, at least in New York City. But there is something, given the culture of surveillance, if you will, that over the course of writing this book really sort of rang true with us. Initially, as you suggest, we were thinking about reality television, YouTube, things of that nature, the fact that there were famous people who were just famous for being famous and what impact that might have on someone who thinks, well, gee, my life isn't any more or less interesting than Kim Kardashian's, and she's famous for no particular reason, so I guess maybe people could be watching me. And again, the Truman Show, for those who've seen the movie, the Jim Carrey character, his life is not particularly interesting, and yet people are, you know, fascinated by it. But we do think in the last couple of years, with the revelations of the NSA and PRISM, and you know, recently this Facebook story about, you know, manipulating people's emotions and so on, we really do think that can have a corrosive effect on all of us to some extent, but certainly those who are at risk for becoming psychotic.
All right, let's get a caller in on the conversation. If you want to join, the number is 210-614-8980. Al has called in. Al, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hey, Al, if you could turn down your radio a little bit and join us.
Yes, hi. I just had a question as far as family members are concerned. How do they interact with their family members? Because they obviously see them as actors, and how do the family members themselves interact with these individuals?
Thanks for the question, Al.
That's a great question, Al. Thank you so much. It's really painful for family members and loved ones, as you can imagine. People are often very hostile towards family members because they feel that they're in on it. You know, how could you let this happen to me? You've put them up to this, or you've volunteered me against my will. And like anyone with a delusion, it's very hard for family members to address that delusion, just like it's hard for psychiatrists to address the delusion. So more than any other group, we do get questions from family members just to that point, how should we interact? And there isn't really an easy answer. The simple answer is to try and get the loved one to see a mental health professional. That's first and foremost, because we're not asking for family members, you know, to be experts. And frankly, even as experts, we struggle. So that's the first thing, because there are treatments, of course, that can help. And family members themselves, there are ways that we can help normalize their experience, that they're not alone, that other families have very similar kinds of experience. And there are certain ways in which family members can help or hinder their loved ones. Getting very emotional and sort of yelling at the person, you know, snap out of it, you're crazy, is not helpful. And by the same token, agreeing with the patient and saying, yes, of course, we are all in a reality television show, is also not helpful. So there are ways to sort of talk around it or just suggest, I don't really want to get into that. We're going to have to agree to disagree. We're not on a reality television show, but, you know, let's talk about the other things that that's really impacting your life. You're not able to sleep. You're anxious all the time. You're not able to hold a job or maintain a relationship. So these are very distressing things. So why don't we go see a psychologist or a social worker or a psychiatrist, and maybe you can talk about some of those problems. And that's one entree into getting the loved one some help.
Now, the thing about The Truman Show, and you're trying to figure out what the movie itself seemed to tap into, you know, it was a popular film. A lot of people saw it, a successful film, because it spoke to people. And, you know, it helped us think about the nature of our lives. And it was also very about relations about man and God and all these other things, mm-hmm. about where we fit in the universe. But then it also, I guess, could provide the scaffolding for people who were suffering from just a general paranoid delusion, and then they were able to impose the movie's framework onto the problems they were having with how they saw themselves in the universe.
I think that's correct. It's not as though people walked into the movie theater and they were perfectly well and they saw this movie and suddenly they were unwell, though, you know, in some sense it kind of did blow some people's minds, but, you know, in a very colloquial way. I think it's more to the point that when things start feeling unusual, not quite right, as is the case in people who are developing a psychotic illness, what we call the prodromal phase of schizophrenia, as an example, where people are kind of on the edge. They may become schizophrenic, but then again, they might not. So we might think of a late teen or early 20s man or woman who might, again, look at their family and friends and environment, and things don't quite feel the way they did 6 months ago. So then you might see a film like this and say, aha, well, that would explain my unusual experience of the world. And so, yes, I think for those people, it is very much just using the culture, as we were talking about earlier, and I like that word very much, using it as a scaffolding for their delusional ideas and experiences.
All right, let's get another caller on in the conversation. Ashur has called in. Ashur, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually had a comment about someone that I know through a friend. She's about 30 years old, I'd say, and she displays a lot of the characteristics that you're talking about. She claims to be what's called a gang stalking, and if you look it up on Urban Dictionary, it describes it as a sort of like government or maybe some other organization. Like what she claims is that the government is following her and stalking her and provoking her and actually putting psychotic notions in her head somehow, I guess, through what means, I'm not sure. But she also ties this in with Illuminati, this whole Illuminati culture that's going on now and stuff like that. So I was wondering if that was maybe along the same lines as what you're talking about.
Sure. And what is the word that she used to describe herself?
Gang stalking. She says that she's being gang stalked. And if you look up online, there are a bunch of weird websites that kind of go into it, but they all seem to be run by people that have the same kind of delusion that you're discussing.
All right. Ashur, thank you for your call. So, Dr. Gold, have you heard of that before?
I have heard of gang stalking. I'm certainly no expert, but I think it is something of the sense that people are being harassed online by, again, unknown others that are in cahoots and are trying to drive them crazy in a sense. And the idea that people are putting thoughts in one's mind, that is another form of delusion, thought insertion it's called, where people feel like their own thoughts are not theirs. You know, for the most part, we know that our minds and brains create the thoughts we have, but for some people, it feels very foreign. Other people experience thoughts being taken out of their head as though, you know, you and I might say, oh, I just forgot what I came into the room for. Some person with this delusion would think that, you know, again, a foreign source using, you know, whatever technology that might exist has actually scooped the thought out of their mind. So this is an example where I suppose you know, it's not a clear or pure culture. It's not as though one has Truman Show delusion or one doesn't. This would be an example of the use of technology in the person's delusion, the experience of being persecuted, the feeling that many people and unknown people are doing something to them. This is very different than, say, my neighbor is trying to harm me.
Right. And so the people should get treatment. You start, if someone in your family starts talking about these things, then the first step is what?
Absolutely. If you can have the person come to a mental health professional under their own free will, that's always the best.
Right.
If you just suggest to them that they ought to. But sometimes it gets to the point where if they're dangerous to themselves or other people, that other measures need to be taken.
Dr. Joel Gold, his book is Suspicious Minds, How Culture Shapes Madness. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is The Source on KSTX. Thank you for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.